Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders Center, providing clinical research trials that evaluate new therapies and latest treatment options, including surgical intervention for advanced stages of disease. The number for more information is 1-800-492-5538, or you can just go to the steinershow.org website and click on the link. It's right there at the very top of the page. And you are listening to the Mark Steiner Show here on WEAA 88.9 FM at Morgan State University, the voice of the community here in Baltimore, Maryland. And we are broadcasting nationally over Free Speech TV. And you can watch us stream live. You can stream us live now at steinershow.org as well. The number here is 410-319-8888. On our way to getting our 800 number soon around the country. And you can write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And we want to welcome to the show tonight Dr. Chris Marsh. Chris Marsh is a sociology professor at the University of Maryland College Park. Very controversial views on what the black family means and how to get there. And Chris Marsh, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Mark. I'm happy to be here.
When I discovered this, it's my usual thing is, you know, I discovered these things. I said, okay, these are our urbanite stories for the month, and it's Chris Marsh. And so before I read it, my first comment was, well, is there another side to this? Who is this? So I then I read it, and I was like, blown away by both the larger paper you wrote with your colleagues
right.
and the shorter piece that was in the Urbanite,
right.
which you both can link to on our website, steinershow.org.
Great.
I mean, there is the common wisdom in America today, and the hue and cry is about the downturn in marriages in the African-American community, that without marriage, that there's no way that you're going to build a solid middle class or have a middle class built in America.
Right.
And then you and your colleagues came along and did this research, which is really challenging that notion.
Yes. Yes. So as a demographer and as a sociologist, I thought about the black middle class. And when we look at the data, we know that people aren't married as much as they used to. We look at different racial and ethnic groups, we see that marriage rates are lower for blacks versus other racial and ethnic groups.
Mm-hmm.
So what becomes a larger question? And as you mentioned, the larger question becomes, how is the black middle class going to reproduce itself if people aren't actually marrying? And so the larger study makes a suggestion that there's a compositional shift moving away from married couples to young black professionals who aren't married, which I've coined as SALAs, single and living alone.
You came up with that.
Yes.
I like that.
Yes, I like it too. So there's a compositional shift away from married couples to young black professionals who aren't married and don't have any children, and they're now becoming the new face of the black middle class.
What do you mean they're becoming the new face of black middle class? I mean, what are you talking about demographically?
Because when we think of the quintessential black middle class, we go all the way back to like the Huxtables on the Cosby Show.
Mm-hmm.
You had a father who was a
doctor
and a mother who was
a lawyer, right? Right, right.
So you think about them being like the quintessential black middle class family. Then if you even look at the media outlets, you now see where you have like movies like Something New or Living Single when you look on the television. And so I'm like, okay, maybe media has it, but the scholars haven't quite figured it out yet where the black middle class looks different now. You don't have the two-parent household with the two children and the dog. It now is. It's comprised of these single and living alone households.
But this is a very complex piece, an issue. I mean, so when you – because just step back for just a minute. If you look at the history of the black middle class, I mean, for – 100 years, let's say, or
right.
so, there was a black middle class that developed that was the leadership of the black community inside a segregated America.
Right.
And there's that old black middle class and their children still exist, and they still
yes.
are part of the world. But at the end of segregation, this explosion began to happen of white-collar workers and others beginning to make a living that was defined as middle class. However we define that, we can talk about that too.
Right, right.
Your paper, there's a lot of definitions about what that means. And then we had this downturn, and so many people, as Eugene Robinson puts in his book, Disintegration, or the abandoned who have been left behind, and this middle class has grown, which he maintains in his book is the largest segment of the African-American community and the most important segment that we're ignoring. Not most important, but a segment that's always being ignored.
Mm-hmm.
But you wouldn't countervail any of that.
No. No. And, you know, it's really interesting. When we think about different ways and avenues into the middle class, Detroit's a really great place to think about the black middle class, because you had blacks that worked in the car factories. And they worked there for many, many years. They had great pensions. They were able to buy really great homes. And that's another way of thinking about the black middle class. And that worked years ago. But now we have to look at college rates for blacks. We have to look at home ownership among blacks. And there has to be a new way of thinking about the black middle class. We can't continue to think about it in the same kind of way, in the same kind of context. We have to look at what's happening around us, even from a demographic perspective. And there's no way we can ignore the single and living alone households. It's just impossible to do at this point.
I want you to define single living alone households as you talk about them, and even the notion of households, which is just in dispute because of how you define households and how census and other people define what a household means.
Right.
But on a way to get there.
Okay.
What you're saying, though, I mean, there have been countless people on this program and in all other media and have written that the demise of the black middle class in America is because of lack of marriage.
Right.
Too many African-American women, but also of men, from your work,
right,
have chosen for whatever reason, for X amount of time or forever, to remain single,
right,
and are doing very well,
right.
But other people are saying, no, that's what's going to destroy the black middle class and not allow it to grow and prosper and pass on.
Right. I want to tackle that in kind of two different ways.
Okay.
The first part, or the first wave of the answer that I would give is that when we think of the single and living alone households, it's really interesting because it's like, all right, we know that there's a demographic shift. We know that people aren't marrying. My research doesn't focus on why they're not marrying, but what's the consequence of them not marrying? And one thing that we found through the research is that there is this emergence of these single and living alone households. So that's something that, although I don't tackle why they're not marrying, let's look at the consequences. And I think the research kind of tackles that. But the second part of that question, I think, really gets to – the second part of my answer really gets to your question, and that becomes – there becomes a concern about if you have so many households that are single and living alone in the black middle class, how is the black middle class going to reproduce itself?
Right.
How is it going to look a decade from now, another decade from now? And when we think about black middle class, we think about the larger middle class, we often think about how your class status transcends from one generation to the next. So parents are able to pass on wealth to their children, or any assets that they have, they pass on to their children. If we now have this emergence of single and living alone households in the black middle class, who in fact are these people going to transfer their wealth to?
Right.
So that becomes a really provocative question. So the notion of intergenerational transference of wealth really is something that we have to tackle if the black middle class looks very different than other middle classes where it's dominated by married couples with children.
But you're also saying, it seems to me, and then we'll get to the phones. Folks, join us here at 410-319-8888 from whenever you're listening to this show, here in Baltimore, in Maryland, Prince George's County, around the country, around the United States, 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. But when you talk about, as you put it in your work and in this article, the Love Jones cohort,
yes,
from the movie,
yes,
that it's almost as if it's saying that you're also saying that it's not necessary to marry, and that more and more people are finding it not necessary to marry, and other people say that's a terrible thing. And you're saying it's not such a terrible thing.
And you know what, Mark? That happens all the time. People often call me, well, they either call me Dr. Love Jones, or they call me...
they call me a TV show, make a lot of money.
Okay, great. But they also, people often make this assumption that I'm anti-marriage. Let me please go on record saying that I am not anti-marriage. Chris Marsh is not anti-marriage. All I'm suggesting is that although people are not getting married, and marriage has typically been thought of as the avenue into the middle class, there's a group of individuals who have developed a very innovative way into the middle class that does not include marriage. That's what I'm really suggesting. Not that you shouldn't marry. Not that marriage isn't a great thing. I'm just simply saying, although you may not be married, you can be in the middle class. But here's what's interesting. There's this kind of assumption that you need to, there's a value judgment, and to be in the middle class, you have to be married. So if you're not married, there's no way you could be in the middle class. And I'm trying to kind of dispute that and debunk that and say, no. You can definitely be in the part of the middle class, and marriage doesn't have to be one of the attributes you have to be in the middle class, the black middle class.
So who in the black middle class world is a sala, is single and living alone? Who are single and living alone people?
The single and living alone person is one where they own their own homes and they live alone, or they could possibly, and I've been talking about this in the larger paper, they could actually be in a relationship where they've pooled resources with someone, but they're not in a romantic relationship. But for whatever reason, they decided to pool resources and live together, because if they're not married, you know, it's better to have someone else in the house to help out. So you could be a person who actually does have somebody in the house with them, but they're not in a romantic relationship.
So, and you're saying this is the second largest group demographically in the black middle class?
Yes.
Talk about that.
Yes. So the larger paper looks at census data from 1970 until 2000. And what we found is that by far the married couple households dominated the black middle class category in 1970. By the time we got to 2000, we found that numbers have decreased for married couples, and the numbers have actually increased for single and living alone households, so much so that they're the second largest household type that's middle class when we look at data for 2000.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
And I'm also starting to look at some data that just was released in 2008, and we're finding that still in fact is the case, that they still are the second largest household type.
And you also had some interesting studies of this piece that was in the larger study, but also you did with John Iceland.
Yes.
From the University of Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Where you all wrote about that single and living alone African-Americans are more likely to live in a heterogeneous neighborhood than a homogeneous neighborhood.
Right. Right. And what's really interesting about that, because I'm really interested in racial residential segregation. That's another one of my passions. And John Ice and I co-authored a paper. And we were really interested in trying to find out where single and living alone households actually lived. We wanted to know if they were more in an integrated neighborhood or if they were more in a segregated neighborhood. Because we know from the demographic literature that for segregation, black married couples and white married couples are very segregated.
Right.
Things have gotten better, but because you have this different kind of household type, you have this single and living alone household where you aren't married, you don't have children, you don't have to think about schools, or you don't think about like large homes for your family. Would you find that these groups are more integrated? And what we found is that they are in fact more integrated.
So why do you think that is? I mean, why do you think that? I mean, if I was thinking about what you wrote there, I mean, you know, you look in Baltimore, there's Pikesville and Randallstown. Pikesville now becoming more increasingly African American. It used to be Jewish. Randallstown, and then the white folks living a little further out or living over on the east side of town, and you got Montgomery County and Prince George's County, mostly white, mostly black suburban neighborhoods. But what is different about the Salas? What is it, the generation?
I think it might be the generation, but I think that they also have a little more flexibility as to where they want to live. Again, schools aren't important to them, so they may not want to live maybe in Howard County. I'm from Los Angeles, so geography here is a little new to me. so they might not need to move to Howard County for the better school system. They might want more of a nightlife, and so wanting more of a nightlife means that they might live in an area where there's more racial integration than mm-hmm. in like the suburbs, where it predominantly could be one racial or ethnic group. But I also think what's interesting about that, though, too, is that because you do have these single and living alone households, you might start to see where these households are starting to migrate out to suburban areas. And I think that's going to be interesting, too, because, again, you think that you have to be married, you have to have children, you have to have the husband, the family, to be in these suburban areas. And I think you're going to start to see an increase in single and living alone households that are living in these suburban areas.
Folks, we want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. You need to join this conversation. We want to hear your thoughts. Maybe are you a Sala? Are you single and living alone? Do you find that it's satisfactory and that's how you're living and making a living and joining the middle class and having a decent life? Maybe you're a Sala plus a child. That's a little different. And where do you live? And what about this idea that the new battle lines being drawn here, battle lines in terms of really discussing and debating out together in a coherent way, whether or not you have to be married in order to make it into the middle class and survive and be part of the middle class. 410-319-8888. Some people think that that's almost a genocidal view to say you shouldn't be married and that's the problem because women are living alone and they're not married to men and raising children together. So what are your thoughts? 410-319-8888. Our guest is Dr. Chris Marsh, Assistant Professor of Sociology at the University of Maryland College Park. You can click on to our website, steinershow.org, and link on to her article at Urbanite, which is this is one of those Urbanite radio stories. She's in this month's Urbanite magazine, and also linking on to her PDF on the larger article that she wrote that you won't be able to read within the timer on the air, but you can read it later, which is The Emerging Black Middle Class, Single and Living Alone, that she wrote with four other scholars from around the country. So 410-319-8888. Jump into this conversation. One of the things you tried to do in this piece was to, you were trying to take this larger overview of this of statuses inside the middle class, to take a look at that. And I when you talk about the growth and importance of single and living alone as a significant, growing significant portion of the black middle class, talk about why it's important. Why is it important?
I think we have to look at it from a demographic perspective. If we know that people are not marrying anymore, or not anymore, they're not married as much as they used to, you're going to have people that are staying single longer in life. A point that I kind of want to make with this, too, is that some of the concern was that maybe this was a transitional category.
Right. You wrote about that.
Yes.
Right.
So some people suggest, oh, it's just that people are marrying later in life, because some of the data suggests that people are, in fact, they're not marrying as long as they used to, but they're waiting a little later. But what we're finding in the paper is that people are actually, this is a permanent category. It's not that it's a transition into marriage. It seems as if it really is truly a permanent category. So with that being the case, and we're looking at marriage rates, we have to start thinking about the other categories. You can't just have married, single, widow, divorce. You have to start thinking about these single and living alone categories, because they exist. They don't seem to be going anywhere, and they seem to be gaining momentum from decade to decade when we look at census data.
You're saying, well, so what does that mean? You're saying people are in their 20s who are single and living alone? You're studying them in 10 years, in their 30s. You're seeing people in their – you can only go so far out, since this is just beginning. So, I mean, what is it you're seeing?
Right. We are seeing that this is not a transitional category. It is a permanent category. So we're looking at census data. Now, census data is not longitudinal data, meaning we don't follow the same people from one decade to another. It's a sample of the U.S. population. And we're able to sample every year and every decade. And what we're finding is that this is a permanent category. And because it is a permanent category, it's something that we really need to start thinking about. And if we start looking at them when they were 20 in 1970, and they're aging 20 every 10 years, we can start to see if they are, in fact, marrying later in life or not.
Though this wasn't really the focus of your study, though. You wrote about it some, is the why.
Right.
Why?
I don't know why.
What are your speculations why?
Okay.
You're one yourself, right?
I am. You know, but this is not the sociology of Chris Marsh.
We're not going to probe the inner parts of your life, Chris Marsh. Don't worry about that.
Like, right.
We're not going to do that.
Right.
But you know, I mean, what is it? I mean, I assume that you also have a group of friends who are also single and living alone.
Right. And interesting enough is that I just bought a house in Prince George's County, and on my block there were three other women that happened to be single and living alone that bought on my same block. So I was like, wow, that's kind of interesting. Because I had an article in the Washington Post at the beginning of August, and they were asking about the demographic shift of Prince George's County. And I said, I know we do have married couples, but you can't ignore the single and living alone. They're there, and they're going to be there. But yes, I am a part of the category. I think it's an extremely important category to study. But what was the question that you asked, Mark?
We're talking about the whys. I mean, what is happening in America that single living alone is becoming such a huge number of people? Then I have a second part to that that comes out of your work.
Okay, I don't study the why question. I look at the consequences of.
But you think about the why question.
I'm going to put that caveat out there first, right?
Right. Okay. Right.
It might be a sex ratio imbalance. There might be more eligible women than there are men. There might be the issue about whether or not there is enough marriageable men in the market, and if there's a saturation of women, then there's more men than women. So, I mean, there's more women than men. So, it's a numbers game. It could be that people are waiting for that dream person to come along, and if they don't come along, they're going to wait and wait and wait, and eventually, that's why it's now a permanent category.
Might wait forever for that, but.
Right? And well, besides being being thought of as anti-marriage, which I'm not, people often think I'm talking about solo women. And I want to go on record saying that there are men that are in this category.
Right.
The women do kind of dominate. I'm working on a paper right now that was just accepted in Race, Gender, and Class Journal. And we're looking at just women by different racial and ethnic groups. But it's not solely a category for women. Men are in the category as well.
I wonder, I guess the negative aspect of that could be for some people, that what we're saying is that women especially who are single living alone are doing so because, this is part of the arguments many other people wrote about in the papers that you wrote about in your larger study.
Right.
They can't find men of the same caliber to want to be with and marry.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another study you cite in here that even says that that's the case for a lot of poor women in the African-American community because men are drug addicted or in prisons, and the numbers even are lower.
Right.
So that this becomes not something that people want to see as permanent, but something is an effect of a social condition. But I think you're also challenging that a bit.
Right. And when we think about it, when we look at I don't spend as much time on the poor group. I spend more time on those that are educated. If we look at it from an educational perspective and we look at it from educational homogamy, where you want to marry someone who has the same kind of educational level as yourself, if you have a lot of women who are getting advanced degrees and you don't have black men that also have advanced degrees, then who exactly are you going to marry? Are you going to marry someone who has less of education level than you? Are you going to marry someone from a different racial and ethnic group? Are you going to partner with someone who doesn't have the same educational level as you? It just becomes a really interesting kind of question.
It becomes an interesting question. But it's also about single living alone is not something that is just affecting the African-American community. I mean, it may be larger in terms of numbers, but it's in the white community. It's in every other community in America where more and more, especially women, are living alone. And I was thinking about in the African-American world, a friend of mine in New York, we just finished doing some work together. He's a filmmaker, Ed Harris. And we talked a little bit about his single living alone. And it's, you know, and that it's part of a framework of people in his world and other people's world and many of the people I can think of. I mean, and it is a phenomenon I think that's beginning more with your generation than it is with older generations.
Yes.
Because most of the old generations are divorced and living alone.
But my generation is choosing not to marry. And why they're choosing not to marry, we don't really know the answer to that question yet.
Well, let's see what our listeners think.
Okay.
410-319-8888. We have 1 minute to break. I'm being told by my little sign down here that they're telling me to watch, and I wasn't watching well enough, but I'm watching it now. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You are listening to The Mark Steiner Show here at WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community at Morgan State University, broadcasting for Free Speech TV across the nation and across the country, across the world. And you can also stream us live now at steinershow.org. However you'd like to watch us, please do. A lot of people are calling in. Folks, we're going to come to your calls as soon as we, Mike and the others who are called in, as soon as we come back from this break. I want to remind you as we go to this break that The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. It's a simple way to stay connected to the topics and events you care about most. Daily content on arts, culture, food, design, style, green living, and much more can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at UrbaniteBaltimore.com, and this conversation this hour with Dr. Chris Marsh is one of our Urbanite Radio stories. Stay with us. We'll be right back to grab these phone calls coming in. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner here at WEAA 88.9 FM in Baltimore, Maryland, the heart of Morgan State University's campus, the voice of the community, broadcasting for Free Speech TV across the nation and the world, and, of course, streaming live at steinershow.org. We're talking with Dr. Chris Marsh, a sociology professor at the University of Maryland College Park, with a really interesting thesis about single and living alone as the second largest demographic category in the black middle class, and that challenging the notion that many people have been making over the years, that if you don't get married, you'll never make it through the middle class. And it's a really fascinating idea and thought. I want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. Let us go first to Kubar in Connecticut. You're on the air and welcome.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Hotep, sister. You know, I find this whole discussion quite generalized and basically miss one fundamental component. It moves from the basis that all the African people here in the United States actually came out of the same cultural nuances. And therefore, I think that is the faulty basis of your argument. You have got, from my perspective, there are about four of them. They're the Black Americans, they're the Caribbean Americans, they're the African Americans that came from Africa, and you can actually say they are the Semitic people. That may be a mixture of those people. And you'll find, particularly from the Caribbean American, I mean, I'm actually British American. I came out of England. And when I hear about middle class here in America, I laugh because it's just basically centered on money. Now, class, from my perspective, has culture, it has education. I think money is perhaps the least of these components within the class dimension, if you look at Lockwood and Woodlaw studies from the 60s. So, you know, when you actually look at the Caribbean American, I live in a very large Caribbean American suburban area here in Bloomfield, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of single African people, but, you know, I think also the vast majority of us are married. And we are not married because of money. I mean, there are major discrepancies in terms of education between many of the people I know. Some people don't have a degree. Some people have a degree. Some people are in work. Some people are not in work, etc. So money is not an ingredient. So therefore, how do you evaluate that within your class analysis?
That's a
in terms of how people are living here. And if you go into the the city of Hartford, you find yes, there's a lot of people who are married. They are married. They're not working. Perhaps husband and wife are not working, or they might be working on minimum wage jobs and they're getting on. And again, that is not an issue for single issue. But if you look at the Black American community, where the vast majority of the men has been taken away into the industrial system, then there is an issue for most African American sisters. So one time,
you've raised a lot of very complex questions here. Let Chris kind of respond to some of these questions so you can get an answer. And go ahead.
Okay, first one that
great
I want
questions, Kubar.
They are fabulous questions. Thank you so much. And there's some of the things that I want to touch on, so I'm glad that you raised them. First and foremost, in the larger study, we looked at we used census data. So again, because I am a quantitative researcher, there are always limitations with large data sets. And one of the issues with the census data that we use is that we're looking at racial and ethnic groups. So when I talk about the Black middle class, I'm talking about those that identified Black as race on the census data. So I don't parcel out for Afro-Caribbeans or any of that kind of stuff. Those people are not parceled out in the data. I just have them labeled as Black middle class. But you bring up a really great question about which I grapple with in the paper, how you actually define the Black middle class. So I've been working on this notion for quite a while. And when I originally started thinking about the Black middle class, and I was actually started thinking about the whole notion of Black flight, the notion of white flight, when certain kind of Blacks move into the neighborhood, move out. I was kind of curious about this notion about Black flight when I was in graduate school, suggesting that if a certain type of Black family moves in, does a certain type of Black family move out? So to understand that, you had to talk about the Black middle class. And in that, I was like, how do scholars define the Black middle class? I have a colleague at the University of Maryland, Bart Landry. We just co-authored a piece for the Annual Review of Sociology that looks at all the literature that's been written on the Black middle class over the last 100 years or so. So if you talk to Bart, Bart is only going to define the Black middle class by occupation. And that's based on some theoretical framework that he says is based back in European countries. Okay. I look at it a little bit differently. What I did was I looked at all the social science literature. And I said, what are the indicators that are typically used to define the Black middle class?
Right.
So it's education, it's occupation, it's income, and it's also wealth. The best proxy that we could use for a wealth indicator was homeownership. So what I did was I developed an index. So in this index, I looked at all Black households ages 25 to 54 and then also 25 to 44. I looked at all those households who were Black spouse, who were a household that had a Black spouse and had Black couples in them. And then I said, okay, let's look at the median income. I looked at the median income and the median occupation level. And if they were above the median income and occupation level, then they received a marker on the index. If they also were college educated, they received a marker on the index. And if they were homeowners, they also received a marker on the index.
Mm-hmm.
So when it was all said and done, you had to meet all four criteria to be in the Black middle class as the way I'm defining it. And that's some people have argued and criticized me for being very strict in my definition of the middle class. But if I'm trying to establish that there's this solid group that's middle class, I wanted to make my standards as strict as possible. if I relax my standards, I'm sure the numbers would even be larger. But I wanted to make it as confining as I possibly could. And what's interesting about my index is that education was actually the variable that was hardest to load on the index. It wasn't occupation, it wasn't income, and it wasn't homeownership. And even with income and occupation, I even did – with income and occupation, yes. I did the 50th percentile, I did the 70th percentile, I did the 90th percentile. And that's not what was driving the index. Education was actually driving the index.
So home ownership as opposed to how much you pay for a place, you might have a condo that costs you much more than a home does.
This doesn't matter as long as you're a homeowner. Because there's
if you weren't a homeowner, suppose you're renting a huge apartment. You know
what I'm saying? Great question. If you're someone who has – if you're a young man who has an MBA, you're making $250,000, and you're an attorney, but you're renting an apartment, you're not going to show up in my index as middle class.
Does it make you a little skewed? I mean, a lot of people in your generation don't buy homes. They're living in –
And it might be – you might think of it as being skewed, but if I'm trying to suggest that this is a strong category in the middle class – I wanted to make sure that there was some kind of wealth indicator, so I had to include homeownership.
Then we have the full bank of calls. I want to get to these other callers who are in here. Kubar, I really do appreciate your show, but you're being part of this program. One of the things Kubar said was the way he looks at middle class is a much more amorphous look in the sense that it's not just about money. It's about attitude. It's about culture. It's about community. It's more than just the amount of money that you make.
Right. And this is a research agenda. So this is going to be around. I'm going to be studying this for quite a while. Right now, I'm trying to
maximize. You're only 37, as you said. You're just starting this stuff.
Yes. So right now, I'm only looking at it from a quantitative perspective. At some point, you really do have to get into the qualitative aspect of it. But I have a colleague who's at Northwestern, Mary Patillo, and she does some work on the qualitative aspect of the black middle class.
Let's go to another caller, 410-319-8888. Patricia, you're on the air.
Hi, this is a very interesting topic. And I can't help but wonder out loud if, Professor, you've seen an increase in single and living alone as there has been an increase in the social networks. And I ask that very quickly because young people tend to do everything online or by texting, including texting at nightclubs. So I'm just – it's much less social intimacy, and I wonder if that may have contributed. And I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
That's a great question, Patricia. Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia, for the question. I fought Facebook as long as I could, but I finally joined Facebook. I gave in. I don't know. I think what happens with these kind of new social media outlets, I think it makes it more acceptable and not so isolating to be single and living alone, because you have people that are kind of a part of your life all day long with Facebook and texting and Twittering. I think I'm saying that. I'm new to that part.
I'm new to it.
So I think you might there might be this assumption that the single and living alone is an isolated kind of category, but because you do have these networks, it makes it so much easier to be in the category. That's why. That's what I kind of tend to think.
Patricia, thanks for that call. Let's go to 410-319-8888. And the first Mike on the list has been holding on the longest. Mike, Hello? You're on the air. Welcome.
Hello?
Welcome. You're on the air, Mike.
Hey, Mark. Mike Johnson. How are you? Hi, Doc.
Hey, Mike. How are you? Good.
Fine. I'm a little confused, so hang in there with me because you probably got a tough class, okay?
There'll be a test later, Mike, so be careful.
I know, because stats was never really my big deal at College Park when I was there. So, but my question is very simple. There was a period within the last 15 years where a lot of people were getting houses, good, bad, or indifferent. You were getting houses for a lot of the wrong reasons and instead of a lot of the right reasons. So you had a lot of young professionals as well as professionals who were getting these houses. Did that play in any study? Because when you look at the fact that there are a lot of people that have houses, when you're economically grading them, as you say, and I may not be using the proper word, but when you think of that, some of the houses, if you're saying home ownership, are we talking about home ownership without 2-3 mortgages or home ownership outright? And I have one more question after that.
All right. We have a lot of calls. I'll let you do it, though, Mike. Go ahead.
My other question is that I have to agree with the gentleman that called two times ago, because there's a generation that's like right on the buffer of you, who it's not about economics to classify the middle class. It's the social and cultural connection that makes the middle class. Am I able to go on a vacation a couple of times a year? Am I driving a nice car? But I still may be living in the urban community where a house is not worth as much as the house that is worth in Howard County. And so I'm listening out in way out in New Jersey listening, but I am loving this show.
Mike, thank you.
Thank you, Mike, for your questions. Let's tackle the first question first. What was the first question again? He was
about the value of homes.
Ah, okay. Yes. With that, the most important thing in the study, I didn't look at whether or not there were multiple mortgages on the home, whether or not the home was what the value of the home was. I was just curious to know if they were starting to build some kind of wealth. And if they were trying to build some kind of wealth, the best proxy I could use in my data happened to be homeownership. So there could be people that were overextended in their mortgages. They were just barely making their mortgage, or they could have two or three mortgages, but that wasn't really the focus. The focus was whether or not they were starting to establish wealth. And what makes it kind of interesting, too, is that some people might think like, okay, well, I'm not married, I don't have any children yet, so I'm going to rent until my husband and I, or my wife and I, or my partner and I are able to buy a home. But it seems as if there might be a mindset, too, among these single and living alone households to say, okay, maybe I'm not getting married, so maybe I need to start establishing roots somewhere. So it's kind of like that was some of the assumption as to why we wanted to go with homeownership and didn't care as much about the value of the home, but just the fact that they were starting to establish wealth and then how they're going to transfer their wealth. And then with the second question, I agree totally with what Mike said and the previous caller. I definitely think you have to look at this like from a cultural perspective. It's like is class – can you measure class quantitatively? I'm attempting to measure class quantitatively. But I do think that there's a component where you have to look at it qualitatively and see like is there some kind of cultural norms that mean you would be in the middle class. And I have a colleague at – Michigan, who's doing work on the black middle class, and she's looking at Jack and Jill. It's a black organization.
That's an old organization from the black middle class from a long time ago.
Yes.
It's still there, though.
Yeah, but what's interesting is you have to be a professional mother, I believe, to be in Jack and Jill. So where do single and living alone fit into the whole Jack and Jill?
That's interesting.
Yeah. So that's Karen Lacey. So we've had really engaging conversations about
that. We'll have to do a larger show with some of your friends on here to talk about all this together at one time. Well, let me go back to the phone to be fair. 410-319-8888. Kwaisi, you're on the air.
Hello. How are you doing tonight?
Well, welcome.
A very, very, very interesting topic. Listen, Doctor, I fit into your category. I'm a single African-American male living alone. Fit into all the categories that you've talked about in terms of being middle class. However, I think I joined your talk show, the talk a little bit late. And what
That's
I
right.
heard you just talk about on my way home from work is some of the reasons why you think women are single and living alone. Do you have any guesses or have any of your studies led to any reasons why there's a increase, or if there is an increase of a single
men.
Middle class African American men living alone?
That's a good question.
Kwaisi,
yeah.
Thank you. That's a great question. Here's what I am not going to do. I am not going to get into that discussion. You might have missed this part earlier today, but I don't talk about the reasons why people aren't married, especially black women. What I do try to look at are what are the consequences, because we know that people aren't marrying. So I don't get into the discussion or the debate that much about why they're not marrying. So I don't know that I feel comfortable enough trying to theorize on some of the reasons. Some of the literature does suggest that it could be a demographic, because there simply are more women than men. It could be economic reasons. Women are outnumbering men in school and higher degrees. I just don't get into that discussion.
But there are also, what he's saying, Kwaisi is saying, what he's saying in terms of his world is a single living alone African-American man.
Right.
That seems to be on the rise as well.
Right.
It's not, so that's.
Right. And that's something that I have to make sure that I often reiterate, and I did here as well. I'm not talking about women that are just in this category.
No,
there are
right,
men
right.
that are in the category. Yeah.
So the question is, I mean, the interesting to explore why, what is this phenomenon and why does it exist?
Right.
I mean, and you even, at one point in what you were writing, mentioned sexual identity as an issue.
Right. Yes.
You want to jump into that a little bit?
Oh, okay. Like, yes. Well, wait.
No, Mark, I don't.
Okay. So, all right, let's jump into it. So, no, I'm just simply saying that because you have people that aren't able to marry, they aren't able to marry in some states, you might have people that are remaining single and living alone. Or you might have two women that want to get married, but they can't get married. So because of that, they're remaining in this single and living alone category. And that's the case.
You might also have
a high rate of homosexuality in the black community, especially maybe black men, for example. So that then decreases the numbers even more so. So there's a slew of reasons as to why. I just don't grapple as much with the reasons why.
Let's go back to the phones. We have a lot of people calling in here. 410-319-8888 is the number. I'm looking at the time. We've got plenty of time. Good. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Joe in Pennsylvania.
Hello.
Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
I was just wondering if there was any kind of consideration that maybe that our generation being single, that we really are married, but we're married to our careers, and it's just not within the lifestyle, you know, to be fair, within a marriage, that we're really so consumed with being middle class in our career and mm-hmm. moving forward, and maybe close to retirement, we can say, now it's time to.
That's great.
Although it's a little too late at that point for some things, but hey.
Right. And you bring up a really great question, and I appreciate you for that. Yes, it might be that some people are married to their work, and they might even be considered a workaholic. I think I've heard that before. But what becomes really interesting, when I looked at this study, we actually looked at households 25 to 54. That's kind of pre-retirement. And we also looked at 25 to 44 because that's kind of the childbearing age. And so the people might actually be marrying post-retirement, and they might be marrying post childbearing age, but my data actually cuts off at 54 to see during the time when they're actually working, mm-hmm. are they marrying, and we're finding that they're simply not. Or a better way of putting it is that they might actually just be married to their work.
There's a question here that was written in, so then we'll go to Lorraine. There's Antoine and Greenbelt, Mike, and a bunch of others. We'll get as many of these calls as we can.
I am
white, primarily Irish American. I'm also a heterosexual male. I've always wanted to marry and never much managed to even settle down. How about all the folks who may need a marriage or partner of some sort just to survive in any economy, especially given the dire forecast for Social Security insolvency? Financial security aside, as well, a well-settled human benefits greatly from a shared life and purpose. Given that the show is about African American demographics, how to homosexual relationships factor in the study. We just talked about gay relationships a moment ago and lesbian relationships. What about the first part?
I am not anti-marriage. I think marriage is a beautiful thing. I hope that people can do it. I pray that we have more people getting married. But the reality is people aren't – certain racial and ethnic groups, blacks in particular, aren't marrying as much. So we just want to look at what are the consequences of that. The study actually looks at black households, but there's a – I did compare white households as well. And we're finding that the single and living alone household is definitely more pronounced among blacks, but it is happening for other racial and ethnic groups, and it is happening for whites as well.
So it would be interesting. We don't have time today, but to come back with maybe a panel to explore the complexities of that.
Right.
I mean, the whys this is existing. And the real moral ethical question that is it good or is it bad? Not to put values or anything, because it can be very subjective, but is it a trend that is dangerous for the African-American community or positive for the African-American community or both or mixed?
Right. And it's interesting because I have another paper that that's forthcoming, and I looked at other racial and ethnic groups. I looked at women. And I think if I'm not mistaken, I think it was Latinas. Their numbers are really pronounced in 2000. And I'm like, wow, I'd love to find out more about that. I can talk about it from a quantitative perspective all day long. I can give you statistics and coefficients and all that type of great stuff and regressions, but I just can't get to the substance of why that is. That would have to be later on down the line. But I'd love to kind of find out more about Latinas who are in the middle class and how they have maneuvered through this single living alone category.
We have a lot of room to talk in this program for years to come here on this subject. 410-319-8888. Let's go to, in this order, it'll be Lorraine, then Antoine. Lorraine, you're on the air.
Yes. Hello.
Hi, Lorraine.
Hi, Lorraine.
I was interested in how you define middle class, especially among blacks, because especially in this area, like in the Washington, D.C., Maryland area, mm-hmm. you'll find a number of well-educated blacks who are considered middle class. But do you consider their debt load? Because many of these the people who are, you know, middle class also are carrying huge student loan debt. So they may be making, you know, a six-figure salary, but they also have a six-figure student loan debt. And so I was wondering how you incorporate or you consider whole definition of middle class.
That's a really good question.
That's a great question, Lorraine. Thank you. In this study, we didn't actually look at debt load. We didn't look at value of homes either. There's a data set that looks at wealth for households. And I think we can start to look at that data set and start to look at some of the debt that blacks are carrying and some of the home values and see if we can start to kind of parcel out those that are really solid members in the middle class that don't have as much debt. But given the four indicators, all you needed to do was make sure that you had all four indicators. But the debt really is something that we need to talk about.
And see, we get a lot of grist for the mill here. As we move this program on in the weeks and months to come, I think this should be a subject area that we really tackle.
Right.
Given the economy and everything else, it's very important. 410-319-8888, not to mention the future of the African-American community.
Right.
Let us go to, who did I say? I said Antoine was next. Antoine in Greenbelt, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
This is a fascinating topic today. I want to piggyback off of what Lorraine had said.
All right.
Which is, I'm a financial coach and I'm an author, and we do regular webinars on the wealth disparities and what we can do to solve those problems.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I wanted to ask is, why it is that we still use the house as an asset in the compilation of the net worth numbers,
mm-hmm.
if that really is not an asset until it's paid off? Because as we look at an asset, something that's producing income, the house can't produce income until it's paid off and you're renting it out. So how does that work when you're defining wealth? And number two, how do black folks stay, or do you know the numbers of the ones who are in the top quartile who stay in the high net worth or the middle class bracket throughout life compared to the counterparts?
Very complex questions, are good ones.
Thank you, Antoine. Great
Chris Marsh.
Questions. Okay, so the first one, again, I can't talk a lot about depths of their wealth. I was limited with census data, and in census data, one of the proxies that's often used for wealth is homeownership. So that's what I was kind of stuck with to kind of start the discussion. I think you make a great point. Lorraine made a great point, and even the earlier callers made a great point that, yeah, you need to start talking. You need to start unpacking this whole notion of wealth and whether or not it really is – there really is some wealth here in these homes, because not very many people are going to have their homes paid off by the time they're 44 or 54. But I just wanted to start the discussion about the notion that wealth needs to be a part of being labeled as middle class. But there are data sets that I can turn to where we can start to kind of unpack the wealth notion a little bit more.
And I'd like to explore more. We can't do today this whole just in terms of how the study was done. I'm still, for some reason, focusing on not including high renters.
Yes.
People who pay a lot of money for rent as opposed to just homeowners.
Yes.
Because many people are getting the advice today, don't buy.
Right.
Buying houses in this market, many people think, is absurd and insane at the moment.
Right.
Given the complexities, derivatives, and everything else they've done to us.
But what I had to do is I had to look at the social science literature. And if I was trying to make an argument to the social scientists, I had to look at some of the indicators they've used in the past. And they have used wealth as one of the indicators. There was a book written by Oliver and Shapiro, Black Wealth, White Wealth.
Oh, yes. You referred to that book.
Yes. Right. And so they talk a lot about homeownership. So I was like, okay, there's no way I can ignore this as one of the variables.
You could challenge them.
I could. Yes. Okay. Still work to be done.
Let's see. Do we have time for one more caller? Or quick call. 410-319-8888. Mike, you've been holding on forever. You're on the air.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Great. Well, welcome.
My question is, when did they start defining black people as being middle class? Because from what I've studied and what I looked at, we've always been at the bottom of the class. And wealth, you say wealth? I mean, we earn more money than most of the oil companies, but yet we build nothing for ourselves. So wealth, I mean, How did you define wealth? We don't have any institutions of our own, and everything is controlled by somebody else. So my thing is single homes with black men. That's always been my guess. Single home with black women, because the slave master has bred that into us. So I'm trying to figure out.
Okay, well, I'm only doing this because we're in the interest of time. We don't have a lot of time left. I want Chris to have a chance to respond.
Okay, so with your comment, thank you for the comment. Again, I think that what we have to really understand is that this is a very small percentage of black households. I think it's less than 10%. So you're talking about a small category. And people have often say, why do you want to study the black middle class? There's a much larger black poor. And so my kind of mantra to them is that if you study both extremes, I think we can understand all of black America. And so I had to start somewhere. So I started with wealth, and I was looking at just individuals. I wasn't looking at blacks as a whole. Individually, how can I define somebody that has wealth? And homeownership was the start of how I try to define somebody that has wealth. There's many different ways I can go about it. I have a lot of research to do. There's many different ways I'm sure I can try to approach that question.
This has been fascinating. Chris Marsh, thank you so much for coming all the way to Baltimore for this conversation.
No problem. Thanks
for
having
me. It's good to have you here. Assistant Professor of Sociology at the University of Maryland College Park. You can go to our show, steinershow.org, and link to both her PDF, her studies, and this article from Urbanite. This has been one of our Urbanite radio stories. It's been a pleasure to have you on the air.
Thanks so much.
Great conversation.
Thanks.
The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Mid-Atlantic Neurosurgical Associates, MANA, a center dedicated to those who suffer from brain, spine, and pain disorders. With 3 Baltimore locations, MANA's team of pain management physicians and surgeons provide a wide range of sensitive and compassionate treatment options to improve the health and well-being of its patients. More information online at manapaincenter.com, 410-601-8314. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our interns tonight were Jacob Mendelson and Shari Barnes, excuse me. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, and find out information about our guests and their work, go to steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. And for Free Speech TV, where you get the news you get nowhere else, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.